Hey, welcome back to a brand new episode of The Film Show with three new films up for discussion today. I'll be talking about, obviously, the new big DC movie, Birds of Prey, or The Emancipation, The Fabulous, Harley Quinn, and so forth, with Margot Robbie. I'll be talking about the rhythm section, a brand new action movie with Blake Lively and Jude Law. And I'll be talking about the personal history of David Copperfield, the new movie starring, I can't remember the name of that film, the new movie starring Dev Patel, of course, directed and written and so forth by Armando Iannucci. Now, throughout this film, I would like to point out that this show, that my voice, I don't know if you can hear that it's a little dry. I'm still recovering from the cold I got, and I might be coughing occasionally and losing my voice as I talk quicker and quicker and quicker and get excited about something. As for anything else that's going on, of course, we're building up to the Oscars. There seems to be a sense of that 1917 is going to win, as it has everything else, but there is an interesting trend here, an upward trend here, of Parasite building up more and more momentum. This reminds me a little bit of when The King's Speech came around and won in that. It seemed to, in a way, not that it came out of nowhere, but momentum was something that it seemed to have very much on its side. The one thing that I will say about Parasite maybe doing better than people imagine, because if it did win Best Film, that would be crazy. 92 years has never happened. It would be absolutely unbelievable if it did win. Obviously, it's going to win Best Foreign Film. I can see it winning maybe another one or two awards of the technical stuff or so forth. But if it actually contended for Best Film, that would be absolutely bonkers. But the one thing I will say is this, and I think it's an interesting point to make, is the Academy is famous for sending out, I actually know people who are either members of the Academy or are friends of people who are members of the Academy, and they get screeners consistently, and so they do send out a lot of screeners. Now, for anybody who has not been to the cinema to see 1917, I could imagine the film not playing the same if you're watching it on your TV at home in any way, shape or form. It is very much a movie, as I pointed out in the review, that lives and breathes in a cinema screen. And the bigger the cinema screen you see it on, the better it will be. The smaller the screen you see it on, the worse, not the worst, but the less effective the film is going to be. And I'm kind of wondering, is with all these screeners that go out, are people just watching it at home and not going to the cinema? Yes, the Academy provides, you know, cinema screenings, but I mean, that's just a one-off. Most people watch things at home, and that film is no way going to play as well when you watch it at home, especially compared to the usual kind of drama that wins, because usually the drama that wins is very character-driven, which Parasite is, whereas 1917 is very visually and very audio-driven. The characters are kind of just walking through this kind of intense cinematic landscape. That's something to keep in mind. Okay, right. So, quick break, and I'll be back to talk about the first film of the day, which is The Rhythm Section. So, stay right there. Okay, so The Rhythm Section. I was really quite excited to see this, in a way. I like the idea of them making female-driven action movies. Hannah's a great movie. Nikita's a great movie. Atomic Blonde is a phenomenal film. So, you know, the idea that there's going to be a new one, something I assume you're going to see more and more of as time goes on. Eon is behind it, the guys who make the company who produces James Bond. Blake Lively is in it, or Lively, who is phenomenal. I can never remember the name of the bloody movie. It's A Simple Favor. I keep thinking It's A Simple Truth for some reason. She's phenomenal in that film from 2 years ago, the Paul Feig movie. Kind of like, it's kind of a black comedy film noir, and she is great in it. And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, or maybe they're going to, you know, carry on with this track of having her do more than just be this like outrageously beautiful actress. And so in this, she plays a character whose life has been, she's called Stephanie Patrick, whose life has been, I read that now, whose life has been essentially destroyed because 3 years previously to when we catch up with her, her entire family was killed in a plane crash. She's now working, she's a drug addict, working as a prostitute in London. And one day she's approached in the brothel that she works in by a journalist, and he tells her the plane crash wasn't an accident, it was actually a terrorist attack covered up by the government. And of course, this kind of thing, she doesn't believe him, but then she actually starts to believe, she wants to believe him, basically. Then through him, she finds Jude Law's character up in Scotland. There's kind of like a 39 steps element to the movie at that point, called Ian Boyd. He then trains her kind of Rocky style in the wilds, and then she then goes out and about Bourne style from one location to the next, looking for the person truly responsible for that. And it is sadly quite easy to work out who that's going to be. This film is like, it's almost anonymous in a way. It's like, it's kind of sad to watch a little bit, because the problem is, even though there aren't many female driven action movies at all, like last year there was Anna, which was Besson's recent movie, which was atrocious. But the problem is that there's like three really good ones, like really, really good ones, and the ones I've mentioned in Nikita, Hannah and Atomic Blonde, and they're a bit different, all of them as well. They cover kind of different ground a little bit. And like Nikita is incredibly stylish, feels very real. Then you've got Hannah, which is very much kind of a different age group, and then you've got Atomic Blonde, which is just massively, massively stylized film, which is just phenomenal. And this is none of those things. Is that? And the problem is because you can, because there's so few films in this genre, and there's like I said, there's a handful of good ones. You remember those like instantly, and when you watch this film, you're just realizing like this is a bit shit compared to them, and it really shouldn't be on the whole. I mean, it's just pedestrian and anonymous. Those are the words that come to mind. Like, it doesn't really pick up. The training sequence kind of feels like it goes on forever. There's nothing particularly interesting to her character, and like I said, she is a really good actress. There's so much more that she could do, and they do not let her do it. The combat sequences are completely and utterly, they're non-starters. They don't really get into that. There's been no training for that. This is the thing that John Wick has kind of spoiled the action movie in a way, in that, you know, the guys behind that, Zelensky and his partner, they spend practically the entire time in pre-production just dealing with the actors and fight sequences. That's it. And of course Keanu's into that, he's well into it. So when you come to these insanely choreographed fights that you can actually film from a distance, they just look so real and so kinetic. And then when you get the usual whip camera stuff that Bourne is famous for, because the actors can't do it, because they, you know, because Damon's arrived on set like 2 weeks before the movie begins, so he can't go through months of training for hand-to-hand combat. You have to have the camera, of course, whipping around constantly so that it'll cover all the problems. Just watch Taken, it's exactly the same, but I think that's more due to age in a way. It just doesn't look as good. And in this, there's like not even a lot of that. There's not even, I mean, Anna, at least there was like one sequence in a cafe that was really quite impressive, action wise. In this, there's largely nothing. There really is largely nothing. There's nothing particularly, there I go. There's nothing particularly that ties it into anything modern in terms of terrorism and so forth that might make it kind of relevant. It just kind of meanders along to its inevitable end. And I think, for once, this is a movie that I cannot recommend in any way, shape or form, even though I like the two principal actors, and it's got Sterling K. Brown in it. But numbers don't lie in this film's case, and that is a $50 million budget. God knows what they spent that on. I mean, Gretel and Hansel cost $5 million, and I understand that's one house in one, you know, in one... what's the word I'm looking for? I can think of the word in Welsh, in one forestry, I suppose. One, yeah, you know, on one interior set and so forth, you know, easier way not to spend money. This has got Hollywood stars in it, I suppose, but still, I don't really get it. It doesn't look like a $50 million movie, I'll tell you that. It doesn't look anywhere near it on screen. And it's made under $5 million at the box office, which is disastrous numbers. It was in my local cinema. Clearly, it was contractually obliged to be there. It was there three or four times a day for a week, and it closed. Literally, no, I mean, usually films go to once a day. They figure out from the numbers, you know, when it's working best, and if it's more like an adult movie in terms of it being for an older, you know, for an older demographic, they will put it on in the afternoon. If it's something more for kids, they're like a horror movie or something, they'll put it on once late at night. There's nothing. Boom, gone, vanished, never to be seen again. And this is a film, I think, that you can really categorize in the never to be seen again filing cabinet. This film is not going to come around to anyone's life very often, in my opinion. It is it's like magnolia paint. I mean, there's no real purpose to it. It's that simple. It's very sad. I don't know how they got it. I don't know how they got it to be so bland. It's almost like it's worked on to be bland in many ways. It is a complete and utter misfire. So there you go. The rhythm section is not playing in the cinema near you, I would guess, because it's closed everywhere. Okay, I'll be back in a second. Let's move on, shall we, to something more colourful, more adventurous, more exciting. I'll be back in a second to talk about the new David Copperfield adaptation by Armando Iannucci. Stay right there. Okay, right, so the personal life of David, the personal history, God, I can never get it right, the personal history of David Copperfield, the new movie by Armando Iannucci, which has been termed as being a colourblind movie in that it does not have an all-white cast, essentially, which, of course, any Dickens movie, given that it's set in the Victorian era and his characters are all white, they would all be white. So you have Dev Patel, you have Benedict Wong in it, and sort of Dev Patel even taking on the main part. So essentially, this is a very, I think, from what I understand, having admittedly not read the book, I have seen other adaptations of the book, and having had the experience of watching David Lean's Great Expectations and thinking it was incredible, and then reading the book, this might very well be the same thing here for me. It is the story of Copperfield David from the time when he is from his youth into adulthood and adulthood even, and his passion is wanting to be a writer. He every experience he has and so forth, he puts it down. Like, for instance, when he's with Nanny Peggotty, when they go out to the boathouse in Yarmouth, he writes it down. Then, of course, when he ends up working in the bottling factory after being abused and so forth by his new father, he chronicles all of it because he feels all of it will be important. This is kind of the overriding idea of it all, is that, you know, what is around you, you think about the idea of authenticity. Everything that he has experienced is what he puts into his work. So in that sense, from what I understand, from what I've read, it is a really rather straightforward adaptation. It isn't trying to modernize it. It isn't trying to change the source material at all. It is a very loyal, very loving adaptation of Dickens's novel. The cast is simply ridiculous. This is one of the, I mean, the look of the film is great. The costume work is fantastic. The location work, the sets, all of it looks stunning. It looks just as good, and this is about the as big a compliment as you can pay to it. It looks as good as Lean's Oliver Twist and Lean's Great Expectations, which are the two great Dickensian adaptations without a doubt. David Lean's Great Expectations is one of the greatest films ever made. It's undoubtedly one of the greatest British films ever made, and might even be David Lean's greatest film, which seems an insane thing to say beyond, you know, Bridge on the River Kwai and Lawrence of Arabia and so forth, but it is that good. This film is very much in the same mould, and one of the things is, of course, is the ridiculous cast. So Dev Patel is stunning in it. You have Tilda Swinton, Hugh Laurie, Capaldi as Macalbo, who's just great. Ben Whishaw, who is superb as Uriah Heep. He's just so horrible. Paul Whitehouse, Anirudh Bernard, Daisy May Cooper. It is very much a kind of who's who of British acting right now. Everybody is immaculate in it. It has humour, it has drama, it has depth. You feel for his character almost instantly. You feel for the kind of the journey he is going to go on that is in some way forced on him, but is obviously the making of him. It has romance. It even, of course, has in David's romance, a kind of emptiness in a way that he experiences. He feels he's clearly looking for that romance to end all romances and find somebody he clearly loves, but it isn't that kind of sweeping romance in a way that the writer wants, in a sense that even kind of that is touching in it. What can you say? Like, you know, the heartbreaking thing about this production is somewhat like Death of Stalin. It isn't as if Amando Iannucci has been given a shitload of money for this. This is, of course, the man who made Veep. He made was involved in the day-to-day, the Amando Iannucci show. He's been around, like, political satire in Britain for the past, as I can remember, 20, 25 years, since I was young anyway. And now he's moved into movies. Of course, he made The Thick of It as well, obviously the best political British comedy since his beloved Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, a show he lobbied for as being the greatest sitcom of all time when they had that poll on the BBC. The thing is that, you know, he's not even asking for a great deal of money for these movies. And like In the Loop, for instance, which did make good money because it had that American connection, whereas Death of Stalin, like, seemingly nobody went to watch it, which is just, it's heartbreaking because it's one of the best comedies of this century. It's one of the best political comedies ever made. It's one of the best black comedies ever made. Again, it has like a knockout cast in it, which is something Iannucci seems to just command because of who maybe people just, I assume people read the material and just want to be in his work because it's so well written. That's it. It's just so well written. And this is the same. Like, you know, we're talking about a $16 million budget, and so far it's crawling to half that at the box office. And that's kind of upsetting, to be quite honest with you. This is a phenomenal story, a timeless story, a legendary timeless story that everybody should know. Like, everybody should know the story of David Copperfield, just like everybody should know the story of Pip, just like everybody should know the story of Oliver Twist. It's that simple. It is one of those things that you shouldn't go through life not knowing, even if you're just like me, a lazy shithead like me who just watches a film adaptation of it. It doesn't matter. It's still a story you need to see. It is, like I say, timeless. It will always work. It will always draw the audience in. And the fact that the audience aren't going to it is, I have to admit, a little bit heartbreaking. So please, if you are thinking of going to the cinema now, because there's not as if there's that much on at the moment, to be quite honest with you. I don't really know what else to say about it other than it's phenomenally well made. It's beautifully scripted and it has a ridiculously good cast. I don't really know how to recommend a movie beyond that, in that it's just a classic story. So without a true kind of coming of age drama, if you like. So without spoiling it, I don't really know what else to say. So if you are thinking of going to the cinema and you want to just go and see something that's just a quality film and you don't know what you're going to go and see, go see this. Just go see this film and up its commercial end a little bit, if possible, because it is a fine film and it does not deserve to make a loss. But then Death of Stalin didn't deserve that either, and I think it did make a slight loss. So yeah, that's a little bit heartbreaking, to be quite honest with you, because these films are genuinely great. Okay, right. So it's out in the cinema now, and it's well worth your time. The Personal History of David Copperfield. So I'm just taking a quick break, and then we're back to talk about last movie, which is of course Birds of Prey. Okay, so back we go into the world of DC Comics for the first time this year, post the Joker. This is the first film from the DC Expanded Universe post Joker, of course, one of the biggest, if not, was it the biggest financial movie in terms of success last year? It must be. Didn't it go over $1 billion and was like 50? It must have made more money than anything else last year, sure. Oh yeah, no, you had Avengers, didn't you? Christ, it must have been close, given that Avengers cost over $200 million, made $2 billion. It's probably you have to say no, it's 20 times. Yeah, no, Joker probably is the most financially successful film of last year. So here we go, back into Gotham, and we are back with Harley Quinn and some friends this time. Well, ultimately friends. So what you have here is that Suicide Squad, although it made good money, was a critical disaster. And so they've kind of rebooted that, obviously, with James Gunn, his version coming soon, which I have no doubt will be somewhat better than the previous version. But the one thing that stood out, obviously, in Suicide Squad, the one thing that really went over well was Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. She was very keen to revive the role, and apparently she is a producer on this film too, and she's been lobbying for this for like 2-3 years trying to put it together. She's the one who brought Christina Hodson in to write the script, wanted Kathy Ann to direct, a female director, and eventually it's all come around, working on the script and so forth to get in the green light. And here we are. We are back in this world with the Birds of Prey. So you have Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie. You have the Huntress, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It's just phenomenal to see her in something like this. She's so good. I would love to see her in a big, big movie. I think she's one of the most underrated actresses working currently. Then you have Journey Smollett-Bell as Black Canary. You have Rosie Perez as Renee Montoya, obviously the police officer that will not listen to anyone. You have LJ Basco as Cassandra Cain, who's one of the main protagonists of the film. And then of course on the other side of it you have Chris Messina, who plays like a hitman for Ewan McGregor's Roman Sionis, who is of course Black Mask. So what it is basically Sionis has this diamond. It gets stolen by Cassandra Cain, the kind of like the teenage pickpocket, and then he wants it back. Now, in the middle of all this, Harley Quinn is untouchable at the beginning of the movie because she's dating the Joker, but then it comes out, obviously, that she has broken up with him, which is what happens in Suicide Squad, and now it's open season on her. All the people have grievances against her. The reason she's untouchable is because she dates the Joker, and one of the people that has a very big grievance against her, obviously, is Roman Sionis, because of the way she kind of treats him. So he wants to kill her, gets hold of her, then of course the diamond goes missing, and then he tells her that there's like one thing she can do to get out of this, and that is to retrieve the diamond, which she goes off to do. And then it all kind of like comes together in terms of the other females, in terms of them versus him. I expected very little from this film, to be quite honest with you. I did not think the trailer looked that good, and yet it is a superbly enjoyable ride. It really is. What's interesting about this film, I mean, it's colorful, it's funny. I like the fact that they went with the R rating. I think McGregor, it's one of his finest roles in terms of how much he's enjoying himself in it. He really does, and this is to take nothing away from the female performances, but he really is having a ball in this film. Like, he just chews up the scenery. He gets the note of the supervillain spot on, as does Chris Messina, as his rather disturbingly weird sidekick slash killer. They both are phenomenal in it. But don't let that thing. The primary cast all deliver fine performances, no more so than Roby, who again clearly feels a deep kinship with this character. And you compare what she has to do in this film compared to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't really understand that movie at all. I'm going to have a little bit of a gripe about it again. I know we're kind of still doing the rounds. I was very happy that when it doesn't win something, to be quite honest with you. And I just don't get it. I do not get what is appealing about this film in any way, shape or form. The Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's just so drab. And her performance is fine as the legendary Sharon Tate, but she doesn't. There's no need for her to be there. The only reason she's in the film is to facilitate the ending. That's it. There is no purpose for her to be in that film at all. I get the fact that it's that passing moment in Hollywood. She's a kind of icon of that in a sense, but still, there's no purpose for such a fine actress to be in that role, and that's just the truth. I understand she wants to work with Quentin Tarantino, that tells you how smart she is, but it's a terrible role for her, whereas in this, at least, she has a great deal to do, and you get to see her acting chops, because she seriously has some phenomenal acting chops. The thing that's fascinating about this film for me is because I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a wonderful little throwaway movie, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Superhero movies essentially are all throwaway movies. I understand some people will hang around and, tell you, for The Joker, for instance, this deep movie and so forth, but essentially The Joker is a hybrid of Taxi Driver and King of Comedy brought together in a different universe. That's what it is. It is a loving kind of reminder of that glorious era of Scorsese's output. There's nothing in it that is particularly new or dynamic, whereas this is the same. There's nothing in this you haven't seen before. It is, it is another kind of trip down that comic book alley that we are going down 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a year into pretty much the same thing, but it's thoroughly fucking entertaining. That's the point of it. This isn't a film I go and see to kind of learn something about the world or to come out feeling informed. This is a film you go and see to just sit down and smile and laugh and feel absolutely riotously entertained. There were movies, you have to remember, in the last golden era of Hollywood, there were movies like this. There were movies like Airport, Poseidon Adventure, Towering Inferno, essentially Owen Allen movies. But there were movies like this. There were kind of like comedy dramas, that had a sense of disaster about them. So they just weren't comic book movies because they couldn't make those movies at the time because they didn't have the effects for it. It's that simple. You look back to the superhero shows from the late 70s, the early 80s, the TV Spider-Man, they look terrible. They look awful. That's why they didn't make them. You look at the costume that Captain America looks like, he just looks like a gay biker in it, for Christ's sake. There's nothing interesting about any of that because they do not have the capacity to make it look good. But the drama, the action, the way everything works, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Those movies in the 70s, those commercial hits, those kind of disaster movies and things like that, it's the same idea. It's all very basic. It's good versus bad. It's people trying to get out of a tight spot. There's nothing about it that's any different at all. And this is just a thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining film with fine performances, and the script has been savaged by some people, and I don't get it, but I want to read this. So this is a review by Nicholas Michlachal in the San Francisco Chronicle. It said, Birds of Prey and the Fabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn is more than horrible. It should not exist. Money should not have been given to raise to make it. The screenplay should never have been filmed. Margot Robbie should never have produced it. She certainly shouldn't have starred in it. Wow, but I think this is a good thing, and I'll tell you why. Because extreme reaction to film is rare in a sense, and I'll even go back to Justice League and Batman vs. Superman, two films I do not like or rate in any way, shape or form, but I found the extreme reaction to them interesting. The extreme level of defense that some people put up for these films. Clearly, they work for some people. Clearly, aspects of the film really hit home. People feel incredibly passionate about it. and people feel incredibly passionate from the other end, wanting to kind of like, you know, wanting to insist that it's a terrible movie. Not dissimilar to Last Jedi, I suppose, in a way. It's just that, you know, or to Spectre, let's say the last Bond movies, so they're not good movies. But I like this kind of like insane passion that this movie brings out in people. There's something interesting about it. Is that because of the all-female cast, the female director, the female writer? Is that what it is? Is there some pushback here? Is that what we're seeing? Or do these people genuinely think that this is that bad a movie? I don't get it. I don't get it personally. I'm not standing here or sitting here, in fact, saying that this is like the best movie of the year. It's a phenomenal film. No, but is it thoroughly fucking entertaining? Yes. Did it make me laugh? Yes. Did it make me kind of like, you know, what I do when I get excited, I'm like constantly hitting Jess in the next seat sort of thing, you know, and she's telling me to kind of calm down. Did it make me do that? Yes. So for me, it was working, and I would recommend anybody go and see it. It will be playing for the next few weeks. Please, this is well spent money, in my opinion. This is a damn fine entertainment of a film. That's it. That simple. It's not going to change your life, but I'd be amazed if it doesn't make you laugh and smile occasionally. Okay, right. So Birds of Prey, it's in the cinema now and will be for a while, I would imagine. Although it does seem to be not making the money I assumed it would make, less than Suicide Squad, which just shows you the bizarreness of the just the box office and what a big push and big stars can do. Suicide Squad was one of those films that had a massive push, had a very well cut together trailer, if you remember that, with the way the music was used in it. That's the one thing that's different. Again, like, the music is used very well in this film, a little bit overdone, but it used well, whereas in Suicide Squad the music was just used so badly. Like, you had songs every 3 seconds for about 3 seconds. Like, the amount of stuff crammed into that soundtrack was ridiculous. But the trailer was effective. There's no two ways about that. They worked the Joker aspect really cleverly. If anything, the Suicide Squad stands as an example of how you can market a film, even though it's a turd, and still make money. But there you go. Birds of Prey, in the cinema now. For me, it's a thumbs up. Okay, right, quick break. I'll be back in a second to talk about what's coming up in the next show. Nothing but thanks to anyone who listens to this podcast, shares this podcast, tells people about this podcast, or just comes to my website, alicewand.com, or interacts with me on it, or whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, I have nothing but thanks. Good, bad, and different. I don't care what it is. I have nothing but thanks. I'll be back in a week or so, where I'll be talking about Underwater, the second new Kristen Stewart movie already out this year. Or is it the third, even? Has she been in 3 movies? I mean, she's just making a lot of movies. I'll be talking about... What else am I talking about? I'll be talking about Emma, the new Bronte adaptation, which looks fun. And I'll be talking about Greed, a film that I am genuinely looking forward to see that I have not seen yet. I missed the early screening of it while I was in New York. The movie starring Steve Coogan, obviously. It looks like something that at least will interest me, even if it doesn't actually work in full. Until then, please... I recommend very much, given the insanity of the weather in the UK and so forth, that you look after each other and look after yourself. And the coronavirus and everything else that's going around the world currently. And the political state of everything. Remember that self-love is incredibly important. And please remember that to tell people how you feel about them is so powerful. It's powerful for you and it's ridiculously powerful for them. There you go. And also remember, in that time, watch some stuff. I've started watching The Morning Show. You know what? I really love it. Not dissimilar to Birds of Prey. It's nothing I haven't seen before, but it's just a well-made TV show that I thoroughly enjoy watching. I did not expect that, to be quite honest. So there you go. Just watch some stuff. Sex Education Season 2, Handmaid's Tale Season 3. There's plenty of movies out. Please just watch stuff or read stuff or listen to stuff. Just involve yourself with culture as much as possible. It's a far safer place to be than the actual world. Okay, right. Until then, take care, and we will reconvene in a week or so. Thank you.